The Jewish Hour can now be heard on jcastnetwork.org, your portal to Jewish broadcasting. It's also on iTunes and on your smartphone using the Stitcher app. Welcome to the Jewish Hour. I'm your host, Herschel Thimmen. We've got a great show for you today. Thank you for tuning in. Where else on the listening waves could you hear a fusion of Irish klezmer music combined with even jazz in there? Yes, indeed. We hope to please everybody. In this half hour of the show, we are going to feature a best-of interview with Harry Friedman, wrote a biography of the Talmud. Fascinating, fascinating fellow, fascinating work. The portion of the week is the portion of Va'era, can be found in the book of Exodus, chapter 6 and following. We're starting the plagues this week. We have a wonderful assortment of Jewish music, as always, and an exciting story at the end. This one's really, I don't know if you call it a tinge of irony, per se, but it's got a local twist to it. Really, you want to stay all the way to the end. Before we do anything else, let's go right to the news. Former Prime Minister Ehud Olmert won an appeal in Israel's Supreme Court, shortening his prison stay from 6 years to 18 months. Olmert was found guilty in 2014, two counts of bribery, and sentenced to 6 years in prison, 2 years probation, and 1 year, and a fine of 1 million shekels, which is about $250,000. Olmert is the first Israeli prime minister to be sent to prison. Former President Moshe Katsav is currently in prison for his part in a sex scandal. Israel approved a five-year, $3.84 billion plan to improve infrastructure in Arab-Israeli communities. Monies will be used to build housing, schools, and fix roads and bridges in Arab neighborhoods. Kenyan Governor Okoth Obada thanked Israel for being the first country to donate supplies to his state, which is flood-ravaged. Israel gave several tons of food, clothes, and other needs, including a solar water heater, to a local school. 30,000 people, this is the year-end stuff now, 30,000, the next three stories are about year-end, 30,000 people made Aliyah this year. That means they moved to Israel. This is the largest it's been in over a decade, with an all-time high of 7,900 immigrants from France. Israel's most popular baby names for boys, Noam, yes. There's also Uri, David, Yosef, Eitan, Itai, Ariel, Daniel, Yonatan, and Moshe. The most popular girls' names were Noah. That's not like Noah from the flood, is without an H. Noah, Tamar, Shira, Maya, Yael, Adel, Talia, that's probably Adel, Talia, Avigail, Ayala, and Sarah. And finally, this is a story you've been waiting for. The Israeli police have finally announced the statistics. It said that it received its 1,000th complaint this week about a stray camel on an Israeli highway. There were 73 car accidents involving stray camels, which resulted in two deaths. Got to watch those camels. And that's the news.
Some of the best jobs in the world are in the radio and television industry, and you too can join the workforce in as little as 8 months when you complete your hands-on training at the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts located in Southfield, Michigan. At Specs Howard School, students get to play and learn at the same time. Imagine spending your class time behind the microphone, spinning music, and hosting your own radio show, or designing and lighting a set for your own TV program, running a camera, learning to edit, directing a program. When you go to Specs, your day will be anything but dull. And if school is this fun, imagine how exciting it is to work in a growing industry. In addition, the credits you earn while attending Specs Howard School are currently accepted at 14 area colleges and universities. If you've always wanted the best job in the world, call for a tour of Specs Howard School at 248-358-9000. That's 248-358-9000. Or visit them on the web at specshoward.edu. Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. This is where you start.
Herschel Finman here. You are listening to the Jewish Hour. I have online Dr. Harry Friedman, is author of The Talmud, a biography, banned, censored, and burned, the book they couldn't suppress. How are you, Harry?
Hi there, Herschel. Very well. How are you?
Good. In case you noticed the quality, Harry is coming to us from England. London, England, Harry?
London, England, absolutely.
Great place. Harry, it says here, Harry Friedman is a writer with a PhD in Aramaic. His books include The Gospels, Veiled Agenda. He's contributed to the Encyclopedia of Modern Jewish Culture and numerous periodicals, Jewish and not. So, what does it mean to be an Aramaic scholar? Does that mean I could throw out any Aramaic word and you could be able to tell me about it?
No, you can. My PhD is in the Targum Pseudo-Jonathan, Targum Unison to the Torah. So I know a bit about that, but I can't promise to translate every Aramaic word you throw at me.
Okay, no problems then. Okay, so you've written a book. It's called The Biography of the Talmud. So
yep.
Tell us, what exactly is the Talmud, and why would a book need a biography? You could just read the book.
You could just read the book, but to just sit down and read the Talmud, as you know, is a major undertaking. It takes you 7 years if you read a page a day. The Talmud is a phenomenal work. I mean, it is the backbone of Judaism. The Torah is our holy book, but the Talmud is what explains what we do and why we do it. And it was written over several hundred years. It's the earliest parts of the Talmud go back to the 3rd century, and the latest parts go to the 6th century. It then takes 200 years to be edited and put into a literary form so that people can read it and understand it. And basically what it is a record of discussions in the academies in Babylon, that's what we now call Iraq, around the Baghdad area, between the 3rd and the 6th centuries. But it's written in such a way that it's not like a sort of in England we call it the Hansard, which is a record of the House of Parliament. It's not just a transcript of discussions they had. It's an edited work, so you get conversations between people who live centuries apart in different places, talking to each other as if they're next-door neighbours. And it is one of the most phenomenal things. The reason why it needs a biography is because its history is so fascinating. It's been round the world with the Jews. It starts off in Babylon. It travels wherever the Jews go, the Talmud goes. And just like the Jews have suffered and were persecuted in many places, so too was the Talmud. And it's a fascinating story. And I think that learning the Talmud is something that Jews do and enjoy doing. But we also need to know its story.
Okay, indeed. You mentioned that if you learn a page a day, it takes 7 years to learn the Talmud. So that would mean it's somewhere up around 2,300 pages long. But your book is 215 pages long. And if I read a page a day, it would take me more than a half a year. So what's this? People read a page a day and they consider that they did something. Tell us about that, please, Harry Friedman.
Okay. Well, when you read a page of the Talmud, you're not just sitting down and reading a novel. You're reading very dense, very closely argued material where you've really got to get inside the argument, and you can't just read the Talmud. If you look at the Talmud page, you've got a column down the middle, which is the Talmud. On either side of that, you've got commentaries. At the back of the book, you've got further commentaries. And to understand what the Talmud is saying, you've got to look at the commentaries, and you may even have to go to other books on your shelf as well and look up what they say about it. So when we talk about reading the Talmud, really we should say studying the Talmud.
Mm-hmm. I'm reminded of a story that when I was in yeshiva, so one of my learning partners was suffering from eye strain. So he went to the eye doctor, and the doctor said, there's nothing wrong with your eyes. It's just that you're suffering from looking at a book too much. He said, when you get down to the bottom of the page, so he said, you should look up for a couple of seconds. So he said, he told the doctor, well, that would mean I would look up like about every 4 or 5 days.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So it warrants study. We're going to talk a little about the logic in the Talmud. Why? I've reported here many years ago, and I tell this over, and it's been re-corroborated, that the Koreans came to Israel about a decade ago, and they spent 3 years trying to find out what makes Jews so smart, and they concluded that it was the study of the Talmud, and actually commissioned that the Talmud be translated into South Korean. I know where they found an Aramaic South Korea, an Aramaic Korean scholar. And they're using it, it's been implemented from 7th grade through 12th grade that Koreans study Talmud. So yeah. What is it about the Talmud that you would say that people would say, well, that makes Jews so smart?
I mean, that's a fascinating story about the Koreans, isn't it? And even more fascinating is that the children in their elementary schools are studying Talmud. Obviously, we don't understand Korean, so we don't know what depth they're studying it to, but it's quite incredible. I think what the Talmud gives you it gives you many things, but I think the reason why they think Jews are so smart because of the Talmud is because it challenges you. It's a bit like, on a completely different level, it's a bit like playing chess all day, every day. It forces your mind to think in a certain way, a logic which, you know, people who've spent years in yeshiva can come out and they can learn anything in any academic environment, anywhere in the world, because it's training for the brain. And that's why I think the Koreans think it's the reason why the Jews are successful. I think actually there are other reasons as well, but that's, you know, it's certainly one of them.
Mm-hmm. There's a joke which is told, which sort of like depicts Talmudic logic, where a person comes to a rabbi and says he would like to start studying Talmud. And you've included that in the beginning of your book. Could you tell that joke, please, Harry Friedman?
Yes, it's quite a long one. So the guy goes to the rabbi and he says, I'd like to teach me Talmud. I'd like to learn some Talmud. So the rabbi says to him, okay, two men fall down a chimney. One comes out clean, the other one comes out dirty. Which one goes to wash? The guy thinks for a minute and he says, well, obviously it's the dirty one who goes to wash. And the rabbi says to him, I told you didn't have a head for the Talmud. How can it be the dirty one who goes to wash? The clean one looks at him and he looks at the clean one and he says, he's clean, so I must be clean. So he doesn't go to wash. The guy thinks for a minute.
So it means that the guy with a clean face goes to wash his face because he sees the other guy has a dirty face and thinks my face must also be dirty. So the guy with a clean face washes it.
So that's the next thing. So then the guy with the clean face goes to wash because he sees the guy with the dirty face.
Right.
And the rabbi says, no, you idiot. Why would he do that? The guy with the clean face. Sorry.
You get it right. Now, so he asks him the question a second time.
Yes, he asked him the question. He says, he's looking at me. He's not washing, so why should I wash? I must be clean as well. So this is the guy with the dirty face. Doesn't go and wash. So the guy thinks again. He thinks. I don't know. I have no idea which one goes to wash. And the rabbi says, you moron! How can you imagine that two men fall down the chimney and one comes out clean, one comes out dirty? I told that really badly, didn't I?
Yeah. How could you imagine that two people are going to fall down a chimney? One have a clean face and one have a dirty face.
That's right. I didn't explain that at the beginning.
Yes. The question then becomes: is this is actually the way, like Talmud? It's making fun a little bit about Talmudic logic, but there's a lot of theory in the Talmud. It's like people are spending a lot of time on things which aren't practical. There's a lot of situations. The classic argument of Talmud that I give involves, right at the beginning, it's things that were learned with a little kid right at the beginning of their onset of their Talmudic careers, is involve finding scattered fruit. And there's a certain amount that you're allowed to have. If you find a certain amount of scattered wheat in a certain area, you could keep it. So the Gemara asks the questions: what happens if you double the area and double the wheat? If you half the area and half the wheat? If instead of wheat, it's sesame seeds, which are very expensive. If instead of wheat, it's pomegranates, which are not so expensive but easier to pick up. And at the end of this whole thing, which takes up more than a page, the Gemara says, and the answer to all these questions, we don't know.
We don't know, because what the Gemara is doing all the way through here is challenging the premise. And come back to the guys falling down the chimney. You said two guys fall down the chimney, one comes out clean, one comes out dirty. The Talmud challenges that. You can't just take a statement and take it at face value. And this is one of the ways of understanding Talmudic logic. But this idea that we don't know is also fascinating, because it doesn't necessarily mean we don't know the answer. It means there's more than one answer. And we get the story of when you're cleaning the house for Pesach, for Passover, and you see a mouse running in under the floorboards with a piece of bread in its mouth. And a few minutes later, you see a mouse running out from the floorboards with a piece of bread in its mouth. And the question is, is it the same mouse and the same piece of bread? In other words, do you know that there's no bread under the floorboards because the mouse has taken it out again? Or is it a different mouse and a different piece of bread, and the first mouse has left the bread inside the house and you've got to search under the floorboards? And the answer that Gemara gives is we don't know. But what it's really saying there is it's both answers. This word taken means it's both answers. There are two possibilities which exist at the same time. And actually, I don't know if you've seen this in the book, but this comes across into quantum physics. We, these days, quantum physics talks about the possibility of two realities. Schrodinger's cat. The cat is alive or dead at the same time, depending on whether you're looking at it or not. A particle can exist in two different places. A subatomic particle can exist in two different places at the same time, depending on the position of the observer. So quantum physics and the Talmud both accept the idea that reality is not necessarily exactly as you see it, and it's possible to have more than one reality at the same time. And I find that fascinating.
Indeed. That's what Talmudic scholars spend most of their life doing.
If
you're just tuning in, our guest today is Harry Friedman. He's written a book called The Talmud, A Biography. There's other things that aren't really logical. There's a lot of stories put into the Talmud. It's called Agadah, which means basically translated as story. So here I am in the midst of this intense and feverish logical debate among two Talmudic scholars, and suddenly there's this like nice story coming up. What's that all about, Harry?
Well, the stories really are ways of getting you to think about things. They're moral or ethical instruction. There's a very, very long story, as you know, about the destruction of the temple in the year 67. And it goes into a whole big balagan about how a guy gives a party and he invites the wrong person, and the wrong person is upset because he tried to throw him out. And it goes on and on for three or four pages. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind the story is that because he shamed his neighbor in public, he threw this guy out of the party in front of everybody. Therefore, his neighbor took revenge on him, and ultimately the temple was destroyed. So the greatest calamity to have affected the Jewish world at that time was caused by something which seems so insignificant. You threw a guy out of a party. But that's a very obvious example. Some of these stories are less obvious, but they're all trying to tell you something. They're all a way of giving you some sort of theological or ethical or just some different message which you have to read and understand.
Mm-hmm. So there, instead of just saying, be nice to other people because terrible things are going to happen if you don't, so the Talmud actually brings an illustration. And
because people engage with the illustration much better than if they're just given the words.
Mm-hmm. So now, do we have this formula? You talked about learning a page a day. The learning a page a day could only be facilitated if everybody sort of had the same paginations. The pagination of the Talmud and the layout that you have one commentary, Rashi, who's a simple commentary, who explains the simpleness of the Talmud, is on the inside of the column, and then Tosos, who is his grandson, who asks questions and goes a bit deeper, isn't really all that old. It was set up by those people. First of all, it has to have been after the printing press. The Talmuds that were handwritten, that we still have, thank God, some existing copies of, don't have the same even page setup. So how is it with this, the formalness of the page setup of the Talmud, then, Harry Friedman?
Okay, so in the early 16th century, when printing is just becoming established, and the major printing centers in Europe are in Venice, there's a guy called Bomberg. Bomberg is not a Jew, but he's a printer, and he's got a printing shop in Venice. And he's approached and he's asked to print a copy of the Talmud. He prints the Talmud, and he lays it out in a certain way, and he has his pages. And his pages become the model for all future editions of the Talmud. And the edition, the sort of standard edition that we read today is printed later in the 18th century, but it's still got the same pagination. So it means that anybody who's reading the Talmud anywhere in the world, with the addition of one very important modern edition, anywhere else in the world has got exactly the same page, and you can cross-reference and you can talk to each other because you can just say it on this page and it's there. It doesn't matter who's printed your Talmud.
Okay, now let's talk a little bit about the history of the Talmud. The Talmud had some like rocky reception through Europe. Could you give us a little brief history about that, please, Harry?
Okay, so we have to go back to before the Talmud had its rocky reception. One of the founding principles of Christianity is that their Redeemer will not come again until the Jews are all converted. And so for centuries, the Christians, the monks, are trying to persuade the Jews to understand the Christian interpretation of the Bible, because if the Jews understand the Christian interpretation of the Bible, they'll see the Christians are right, and they'll all convert to Christianity, and their Redeemer will come again. And the problem with that is that the Jews will not accept the Christian interpretation of the Bible, and the Christians don't understand why. And eventually they realize that the reason why the Jews weren't accepted is because the Jews have their own tradition of interpretation, and this tradition is contained in the Talmud. And so suddenly the Talmud becomes the enemy. The Talmud is a thing which is stopping the Jews from accepting Christianity, and therefore the Talmud has to be dealt with. So you get a series of the first one is
let me interject something here. It's a question that's just very puzzling. Okay, so but more commentaries and interpretations of the Bible are found in Medrash, and we don't see that there was such an opposition to, say, Medrash Rabbah, Tanhuma, Yalkut Shmoni, that there was to the Talmud, Harry.
Okay, now I think the problem there is simply one of terminology. I think when the early church understands the word Talmud, it includes Medrash, it includes everything, because I don't think they can't read Hebrew, most of them, and so they can't discriminate between these different books. But in 1240, there's a Jewish convert, and you find all the way through Jewish history these problems come from Jewish converts. Jewish convert to Christianity writes to the Pope and says, the Talmud is anti-Christian, it contains slanders against Christianity. And he lists a number of charges, none of them are true, but he lists these charges and he sends them to the Pope, and the Pope does nothing. And the guy keeps banging on at the Pope, and eventually the Pope says, okay, what I want you to do is I want you to order the kings, or to instruct the kings of France and Portugal and England and Spain, to destroy all copies of the Talmud. So this guy goes and he tells the kings, and the kings ignore him, except for the king of France. And the king of France says, okay, well, I'm not just going to go off and destroy all the copies of this Talmud. I don't know what it is, and why should I go to the bother of doing this? What I'll do is I'll find out what the Talmud is. So he orders a disputation, and he orders the guy who has slandered the Talmud, Nicholas Donin is his name. He's now a Dominican monk. And he orders the senior rabbi in France, Rabbi Yechiel, to come to a disputation in Paris. And it's an intimidating affair. It's held in public in front. The king is there, and the knights and the barons and all the great people of France are there. And Rabbi Yechiel is there on his own, trying to defend the Talmud against this Dominican convert from Judaism. And of course, the odds are stacked against him. It doesn't really matter what he says because he's going to lose anyway. So he loses, and the decree goes out to burn the Talmud. And over the next few months, they gather together all copies of the Talmud in France. But of course, like I said just now, it's not just all copies of the Talmud, because the guys who are going into the schools and the homes and the synagogues and the Bete Midrash and collecting these Talmuds are just collecting anything in Hebrew, because they can't read Hebrew and they don't know what they're collecting. So basically all the manuscripts, this is long before printing, everything's written by hand. All the manuscripts are collected up, 24 cartloads, which is a huge amount of stuff, particularly when you think that every word has been written by hand, are brought to a square in Paris, and they're burnt in 1242. And this is the first of a series of burnings of the Talmud which go all the way through Jewish history until the 18th century.
Till the 18th century, they were still doing it,
yeah. And of course, they're still doing it in Nazi Germany as well. I mean, but that's
Judaism, yes.
Yeah. I think the most famous of these disputations is in Barcelona in 1263, when Ramban Nachmanides, who is one of the greats of Jewish scholarship, an outstanding intellect, similar situation. He's ordered to debate the Talmud in front of the king against a Jewish convert who has become a monk. And Ramban says, I'm only going to do it if the king promises not to get involved in the arguing, so I'm not going to start arguing with the king. And the king agrees. And they have the disputation. And again, the odds are stacked against Ramban. But this time, this is the king of Spain, the king says to Ramban, I have never heard anybody who was wrong argue his case so well. And he gives Ramban it's great. He gives Ramban, and Ramban thinks, great, I've succeeded. And then the king says, but I'm going to come to the synagogue next Saturday with the monk to preach the gospel to the Jews. So Ramban wins and loses at the same time.
Right. He very shortly thereafter took off for Turkey.
He then goes, that's right. And actually, he goes to Akko in Israel, where he meets Rabbi Yechiel, who was the guy in Paris 20 years earlier.
Then they could commiserate. It didn't have the same effect in among the non-Jews in Arab countries per se.
No, it didn't. I think, you know, the Jewish experience in Arab countries until, you know, the last 150 years or so was very different. The Jews were second-class citizens, but they were tolerated, they were protected. And first of all, I think Islam has a different, you know, the Talmudic logic and the way that the Talmud deals with the problem is replicated in Islam. And the fact that Talmud and Islam grew up in the same environment, but Baghdad in the 7th, 8th centuries is a center of Jewish scholarship and a center of Islamic scholarship. So they've got a lot more in common.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Again, if you are just tuning in, shame on you. You should have been here 20 minutes ago. But anyway, our guest is Harry Friedman. He's written a book called The Talmud, A Biography. And we're talking about the Talmud. What about, say, as Judaism has developed in the modern time, you have something called the Enlightenment movement, Moses Mendelssohn, you have the Stephen Wise, the Reform movement, and with the Talmud as well.
Yeah, this is interesting, isn't it? I mean, I think this is not anti-Talmud. This is about trying to bring the modern world into Judaism. There's a perception amongst certain Reform movements that Judaism was old-fashioned. Certainly when the Reform movement first started in the 19th century, some of the things they wanted to do were to change the prayers into English, to get rid of the prayers for the return to Zion, and they wanted to get rid of some of the ritual laws which they considered out of date, like kosher meat and things like that. And they saw the origins of these things in the Talmud, and therefore what they said was, it's the Talmud which has kept Judaism out of the modern world. We want to go back to pre-Talmud, to the Bible, to the prophetic tradition, and look at the morality and the urgings of the prophets for people to live good lives, and we're not so worried about the rituals which the Talmud is explaining.
Well, where's the shortcoming in that? Can I just read the Bible and understand what it says?
Well, I think the shortcoming is the proof is in the pudding, because what's happened now in, I think, nearly all Reform and progressive movements, isn't there is an interest in the Talmud. They're not necessarily going to, you know, start to keep things in the way that the Haredi, the strictly Orthodox communities will keep it, but they're interested in the Talmud because they see that the Talmud is of value. Even if you're not going to keep the law in all its detail, just the study of the Talmud and the understanding of the origins of Judaism and how it's progressed to wherever you are on the spectrum, that journey starts with the Talmud.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Okay, that's going to just about wrap it up for us today. We want to thank you so much. Again, our guest has been Harry Friedman. He's written a book called The Talmud, A Biography, Banned, Censored, Burned, the book they could not suppress. Excuse me. It is published by Bloomsbury and available wherever where you buy books from. And we want to thank you so much for taking up some of your time and wish you tremendous success with this work.
My pleasure. Thank you for your time.
Okay, take care. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
The Art Studio of Oak Park is now accepting students. Whether you're a real beginner or have been at it for a lifetime, the Art Studio of Oak Park has something for you. All levels welcome, all ages welcome. Private tutoring or small friendly classes. Flexible hours available. The Art Studio of Oak Park is very affordable. Make your life better. Put art into your life. The Art Studio of Oak Park offers lessons in a strictly kosher environment. Call today, 248-542-5087. That's 248-542-5087. It's great having an art room right in the neighborhood.
Hey, Shulfimin here, listening to The Jewish Hour. I found that interview fascinating, and I hope you did too. And if you have any comments about it, drop me a line at rabbifinman.com. It's time for music. Eighth Day, they've done it again. This might be the third time, maybe in 6 weeks, we've played a new song by Eighth Day. They're becoming very prolific. This is together with Blue Melody. They are a backup band that have their own station on YouTube. So you can go to bluemelody.com. The song is called Mama Rachel, which is about the matriarch Rachel. Let's listen in.
Dika hey mitamish fuchen gerais yam vidiš ludim moj skištel. Kom nej, vindik vinej, so in fin lovens hoz. Di šenske, mishpuche hoiv der bel. Am beimu offen wei, in der agerroisen steh. Behalten am amirchu, dort am lei. Ihre Kinder fiel mit Zures, kim in klein in ihr Haus. Bei am amir, heut mit Schnelle. In Beis HaMikdosh B'Simcha Soilon En Shtave Dir Parshtei Siz Letoi Ve'Alts Givei Shubivonit Mi Givino Mame beit far ins rache mun is schon Odo di gishvo ire no dei Yesu kor li filose dus is dain balo Far gest nisht al zio in shesho
Assurance of quality and excellence in kosher? Look for the Michigan K on the label. What's it look like? The Lower Peninsula of Michigan with a K. It's the symbol of the Michigan Kosher Supervisors. Go to their website, mikosup.com. That's M-I for Michigan, K-O for kosher, and S-U-P for supervisors, mikosup.com, and find this month's featured products. You'll find Michigan K products wherever fine food is sold, especially at Natural Food Patch on West 9 Mile Road in Ferndale.
Hey, Shulvim, and here you're listening to the Jewish Shower. We got a request. This is from Sam, who lives up in the JCC complex of senior citizen housing up in West Bloomfield. He said he wanted to hear Mickey Katz doing Bagel Call Rag, which is a classic. Let's hear it. Thanks, Sam, for calling in.
Rag mops, brag the cop. Han, Razumachet, have some lox with cream cheese. Here comes Mendel with a bagel called Rag. Was klezmer Manny Klein with a hey nanny nanny and a haka rhyme. Now we're cooking the hoe with gas. Come shame barrel play Yiddish jazz. I guess in there in Pippic Barrel Gill, you scribble like a genius, such gefil. Here comes a little hebop, zets, Bocha, bo, it's me, Kep Katz. Bum 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 bum. Itchy, bitchy, bitchy, fussy, hutchy, gitchy, gitchy, hut. La 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 la. Yum, kitty bum, kitty bum, a little chim chum, la la la. Now, folks, you know that this bagel call, that's strictly playing for a gag. Beat it out, Sammy Weiss. Let's hear the bugle call rag.
Someone you know have an addiction to opiates? Ready to take your life back but don't have the time for a long inpatient program? MDS Drug Detox is a team of physicians with extensive experience in the field of rapid drug detox under anesthesia. MDS is the nation's only rapid opiate detox under anesthesia facility with the same doctors, RNs, and certified paramedics attending the entire drug detox process. MDS Drug Detox is safe and effective. Their goal is to provide the best, the safest, and the most economical way to free you from your addiction. MDS uses the highest standards of care and the best FDA-approved medications. MDS Drug Detox understands what your concerns are. Make the call today, 888-637-6968, or go online to www.mdsdrugdetox.com. That's 888-637-6968, MDS Drug Detox.
Herr Schulfenman, here you're listening to the Jewish Hour. We got a call from, actually a letter from a person who identified himself as Avi from Oak Park. So these are two, it's very rare we get two requests in one day for music, but he likes Sephardic music and wanted to hear, he's like putting me to the challenge. It's like, does the Jewish Hour archives have? So he wanted, there's a standard Ladino song. For people who don't know, Ladino is like the Spanish version of Yiddish, which is for German. It's a mixture of Spanish and Hebrew, which Jews spoke throughout the time that they lived in Spain. And there are still Sephardic Jews who still speak it. So one of the more classic Ladino Jewish songs is Cuando el Rey Nimrod, which was a song about the test that Nimrod, it appears in the Bible, gave to the patriarch Abraham about bow down or I'm going to throw you into a furnace. This is Gaon Yoharim, and thank you, Avi, for the request.
Quando il re Nimrod dal campo salia, mirava nel cielo e en la estreria, vido luz santa en la giuderia, che havia de nascer Abraham Avinu. Abraham Avinu, padre querido, padre bendito, luz de Israel. Abraham Avinu, padre querido, padre bendito, luz de Israel. La mujer de Terach quedó preñada, de día en día me preguntaba, ¿de qué tenés la cara tan demudada? Ella sabía el bien que tenía. Adrama
avinu, padre querido, padre bendito, luz de Israel. Adran avinu, padre querido, padre bendito, luz de Israel. Quando le re Nimrò dal campo salia, mirava nel cielo e nella estreria, vido luz santa en la giuderia che avia de nascer Abraham Avinu. Abraham Avinu, padre querido, padre bendito, luz de Israel. Padre bendito, luz de Israel.
Why go to a hospital to get healthy? At Encompass Healthcare, you get the state-of-the-art wound care like in a hospital. The same medicines, the same everything without being in a hospital. Why put yourself at risk of getting a hospital-borne infection? Did you know that last year, 1 in 6 people died in America because of infections they got in hospitals? Encompass Healthcare is an outpatient facility. That means you get your wound care treatment and then go home. There are no wait times at Encompass Healthcare like in ERs. Healthcare is personal and works better, faster, and easier. Encompass Healthcare provides a state-of-the-art outpatient facility close to where you live. Call 248-624-9800. That's 624-9800. Auto accident, workman's comp, and most insurances accepted. Encompass Healthcare's goal is to get you healthy with as little disturbance to your daily activities. Call 248-624-9800.
Herschel Finman, here you are listening to the Jewish Hour. This week's portion is a portion of Va'era, and it opens up with the continuing saga with Moses and the Jewish people in Egypt. Last week we left off, Moses went down to Pharaoh and said, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh said, "No, I'm not doing that." So Moses went back to God and said, "I quit." So here it is now. The Almighty is responding to Moses' resignation. And what does he say? He says, Va'era, I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, to Jacob, and I appeared to them with a lower level name of God, meaning a lower revelation of God. And to you, I appeared with a higher name of God. Which is sort of like saying, well, why are you bellyaching? Which is really what God's retort was. You look at Abraham. We just played a song about Abraham and Nimrod. Good segue. That Nimrod said, bow down or I'm going to throw you into a furnace. Abraham said, no brainer. Throw me into the furnace. And he walked out. Did Abraham come to me the next time we spoke and said, you know, God, I didn't really appreciate being thrown into a fire for the cause. No, he did it because that's what he did. Now you have Isaac, for example. Isaac allowed himself, because remember, he's not a little kid, as the Bible suggests. He's 37 years old. Allows himself to get tied down to a pile of wood on an altar, ready to get slaughtered for the cause. Did Isaac, when he spoke to God, ever say, God, I'm out of here. I don't want any part of this business. This is like, you know, hello, you could get killed doing this. Nope, never said a word. Jacob led a life of misery, such that we say the last 17 years of his life when he was living in Egypt, which was called the worst place in the world to live, those were the best years of his life. You can imagine what the rest of his life was like. Did Jacob complain? Nope, Jacob did not complain. So now the Almighty turns to Moses, says, you know, if you recall when we were standing at the burning bush, I said that you're going to go to Pharaoh and he's not going to let you go. Because what kind of story is that? Moses goes to Pharaoh, says, listen, the God of the Jews came to me and he wants you to let the Jewish people go. It's time. We have to go get the Torah. And Pharaoh says,
I think that's a good idea. Okay. And then they leave. Okay. It would have not have been the story that it was, the magnanimity of it. It would not have been of the epic proportion. They would have not have made movies involving casts of thousands. If that's the way it would have gone, it would have just been some incident. Jews would have left. They would have gotten the Torah. And then, you know, hey, like this, we have something to talk about because the Almighty said, we want the publicity. We want this. This is marketing over here. It's obviously a lot more than that. I'm just being a little bit glib. But the point is, Moses, at the first sign of adversity, wanted to throw in the towel. He said, I've had enough of this. I want to go back to being a shepherd. A proper leader. What's a proper leader? Who is a proper leader? Who has the qualifications to be a proper leader? Is somebody who would really not rather be a leader. They were put into that position because of their abilities, their talents, their skills, their knowledge, etc. But if it were up to them, they would rather not be there. That's the person you want to have for a leader. All the rabbis and the Jewish leaders and the great rabbis, they would have all just been happy. Just leave me alone. Let me sit down with my books. Maybe I'll write some stuff. And I'll just enjoy myself over here. I don't need the headache of being a leader. So Moses set the trail over here. He just like said, I'd rather not. And God said, yeah, so nobody does. And if you did want to do it, I wouldn't want you. That's when he said, and you don't have to worry about your success. Which is a lesson to us. What do we have to do? We have to do. The accomplishments of our doing is totally and completely not up to us. It's totally up to the Almighty. You take a look at a doctor, for example. Doctor receives a certain amount of training so that when a patient comes to him, he does procedure X, and it works, and everybody's happy. Then another patient comes, same problem, he does the same procedure X, and it works, and everybody's happy. Third person comes in, same problem, he does procedure X, and it doesn't work. It's like, what happened? It's simple. What the doctor is providing is not the cure. The doctor is providing the means for the Almighty to cure. So it's the same thing if you're not a doctor, whatever profession you may be engaged. It's not you who are doing it. You're doing whatever you're doing. You're providing the vehicle for the Almighty to be able to get done what needs to be done. So the accomplishment is not ours. What you are able to achieve, that's all the Almighty. But the Almighty says, you should know. In next week's portion, God says, come with me to Pharaoh, is the name of the portion. He doesn't say go. He's not sending. He says, I'm here already. You have to come to Pharaoh where I am right now, which is where you have to be. Because if we recognize that the Almighty is with us, you don't have anything to worry about. Don't worry about if you got there. Just worry about getting there. We got to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Jewish Hour.
Hi, this is Spex Howard from the Spex Howard School of Broadcast Arts. We're happy to sponsor The Jewish Hour and bring quality radio programming to the community. While much of the funding for The Jewish Hour comes from its sponsors, it's listeners like you that help keep the Jewish Hour on the air. Please send your tax-deductible donation to The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. That's 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. Your help is greatly appreciated.
Hey, Schulfman here. You're listening to The Jewish Hour. Would you like to get in touch with me? Have you got a song request? Ooh, we had two this week. I'm so happy when I get those, especially if it's one something like a challenge, like Juan del Rey Nimrod. It was. I had to think, do I have that? And I thought, oh, yeah, maybe. Let me look at my international shelf and see what's at. Yep, there it was. Wonderful rendition. So something you want to hear right here, go to rabbifinman.com, go on the contact page. You can tell me something that you liked about the show, something you didn't like about the show, some way which you'd like to see the show improved. Always taking it to heart. That's a wonderful thing. Or you just feel like dropping a line. Let's say you're bored. Okay, that's fine. Drop me a line. I'm good. You'll also find archive editions of the radio show if you missed any of today's show or last week's show or the week before that or the week before that. Well, go to rabbifinman.com. And the good thing about it is it's got one of these players with a slide thing on it. So let's say you heard half the show. You just have to hear the other half. You just go to the part that you missed and you're good. There's also archived editions of the E-Parsha, U-Parsha, Hasidic U Story, which these are insights into Judaism presented by yours truly and other media other than this one speaking, and the very important donations page. We are at the beginning of January, and I would like to thank those who participated in our year-end push because, da-da-da-da, we paid for November. Yay! We did it. You did it. That last donation that came in on December 31st for $18, that put us to the top, and we were able to pay our bill. Yes, for November. But that means, it's January. So we have December and January we're still faced with. So it's time. I can't tell you, listen, it's year-end, you know, in the IRS, all that stuff, that's not going to work. So, and as far as Judaism goes, we're right in the middle of the year. So I saw somebody posted on Facebook when he's talking about, New Year? That was so 3 months ago. You know, Jewish New Year was in September. But it's always a good time. Go to the computer. Go to the donations page. You'll help keep Detroit, Michigan's only Jewish radio program, now approaching 20 years on air, all because of listener support like yourself. Go to the computer, rabbifinman.com, click on donations, click on a number. If you have a PayPal account, the whole transaction takes 30 seconds from your PayPal account to my PayPal account. Don't have PayPal? It'll take you 3 minutes to enter in all the numbers and addresses and whatnot. Would rather not deal with your credit card and internet? Fine. Drop me a line. Send me a mail, regular, traditional, at The Jewish Hour, 14,000 West 9 Mile Road, Oak Park, Michigan, 48237. This story that we're going to tell, I'm not exactly sure when it occurred. I think it happened and came to light in the 1960s. There's a rabbi by the name of Beryl Wein who has written a zillion books. He lives in Muncie, New York. He's a venerable rabbi at this point. He is, I believe, the son-in-law of either Rabbi Grubner, I think son-in-law of Rabbi Grubner of blessed memory, who was the previous chief rabbi of Detroit and would come to Detroit quite often. And as it was, he had a meeting, I don't know if he was living here at that time, a meeting with the editor of the Free Press, which is today still called the Free Press. It's not the same editor, though. And I don't know what the nature of the meeting was, but it wasn't important. But the editor told a story that his mother came to this country from Ireland in the 1930s. She was a young person in her late teens, like 18, 19, and had come to America in order to make money, in order to get her family out of impoverished Ireland. And she was an uneducated woman. And this is talking about this editor's mother. And took on a job as a domestic, a live-in, in the home of a prominent member of the Jewish community. This lady in Ireland probably never saw the word Jew, had probably maybe heard the word Jew, didn't know, but she just wasn't familiar with Judaism at all. Since the family had gone on vacation around this time of the year, and they were scheduled to come back on December 24th towards evening. And this young woman was so distraught
that here was this family. They had gone away, and they hadn't made any provisions to put up any decorations or a Christmas tree. And so she took it on herself, out of the goodness of her heart, that she went and got a Christmas tree and got decorations and put it up right in the living room in the front window of this very prominent Jewish family. It says the family came home and they pulled up in front of the house and saw the decorations and thought, oh, we're on the wrong block. And went around the block, said, no, it's the right house. They went into the house. And this young woman came to them and said, I surprised you. You didn't have any decorations up, so I supplied them with you, for you. And she said, and there's no need to thank me. And I put in her Irish brogue, there's no need to thank me. And I can't do Irish. Anyway, so after they thanked her, and, you know, that's very nice. So the father, the prominent person, calls in the woman into his study, and he thanked her profusely for her kindness and handed her a $100 bill, which in the 1930s, you're talking, it's a lot of money. It's probably more than 3 weeks' salary. And then explained to her that Jews don't have Christmas trees. Then the editor concluded the story to Rabbi Wein. It says, in the Free Press, there has never been any anti-Israel material, and as long as I'm editor, there never will be, because of the sensitivity of that Jewish man to this young, unknowing Irish girl. That's going to do it for us. Thank you for tuning in. We hope you have a great week. We hope we had a chance to entertain you a bit. We hope we had a chance to educate you a bit. We hope to see you back again next week. Take care. Amen.